the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Are we becoming trans, America? You know, that is a prefix that is becoming more and more common. Transgender, transsexual, transvestite, cross-dressing. It's becoming something that's not just found on the coasts in liberal, elite America in the blue states. It's something that more and more is becoming a part of everyday life as we are encountering this. And we now have come not so much even to be shocked when we hear someone say they have a relative or a friend or a cousin who has undergone gender change surgery or is now representing himself or herself as the opposite gender from which they were born. But today we're going to be looking at something that I think is a tripwire in the culture. And I say that with a great sense of significance, a tripwire in the culture, because on both coasts now, in California and in Florida, you have school districts that have decided to allow cross-dressing kindergartners. That's right, 5- and 6-year-olds to cross-dress. I think when you reach this point, the logic of postmodern relativism has reached some kind of new low and has reached kind of an end game, a cul-de-sac, in which you just have to wonder, how do we come out of this? What does it say that we even assume that a 5- or 6-year-old understands the issue of gender? We're going to be talking about this. I'm going to take you right to the news stories where this is taking place in San Francisco and in Broward County, Florida. And we're going to be talking about what this means for us and how we as Christians would respond to this. At one level, we have to look at this and say, this is a form of moral insanity, the likes of which we could not even have contemplated, you know, just a few years ago. It would have seemed impossible if someone had said to us, I think this is a fair statement, if someone had come up to us and said, look, in just 2 or 3 years, the issue of cross-dressing kindergartners is going to be decided in some school district, so to allow a boy to enter school presenting himself as a girl in the kindergarten, and or a girl to present herself as a boy. The topic today is cross-dressing trans America in the kindergarten. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. All kinds of issues in the news today. North Korea calls the sanctions that were handed down by the United Nations as a declaration of war. Folks, one of the things we have to realize in terms of this North Korean crisis is that we are dealing with an irrational nation. We're dealing with an irrational state. Going all the way back to the founding of the modern world process, going back to the Council of Vienna, for instance, the idea was, after the end of the Napoleonic Wars, that nations would relate to each other as rational actors on the world stage. We would assume that every nation will act in a rational way, and only acting in a rational way can nations understand how they are to relate to one another. But what we have now is an irrational regime in North Korea. It's the second irrational regime in North Korea. We had Kim Il-sung and now Kim Jong-il, his son, and we have in the Hermit Kingdom the recipe for a catastrophe on the world scene. And now we have the confirmation that, yes, last week North Korea did explode a nuclear warhead. And now you have North Korea saying that the sanctions handed down are tantamount to an act of war, and they are now threatening additional explosions, detonations of nuclear weapons. Where this all leads, I do not know, but I do know this. It demonstrates the incompetence and incapacity of the United Nations to resolve these issues. I mean, it's clear. We're into our second decade of the United Nations trying to deal with North Korea on this question. We're at the second North Korean regime, and still it appears we're going backwards. And you just have to wonder how anyone is going to take the United Nations seriously when it says, you cross this line, we'll do something. All right, well, you cross that one. You cross this next line, we'll do something. All right, you cross that one. Well, you cross this next line, and we're going to do something. And then what they actually do is so ineffective. I mean, after all, where have we ever gotten with these sanctions? Sanctions do not deter states that are irrational actors. And that's what we have with North Korea. You know, as a Christian, there is another issue here, and that is the reality of evil. North Korea wants this weapon, and we have to know that given the behavior of this regime, the weapon of mass destruction in the hands of Kim Jong-il is almost incomprehensibly evil. Now, in this postmodern age of moral relativism, there are a lot of people that don't want to use that word, or they want to use it only within a very limited confine or context. But the reality is, it is bad news for the entire world that Kim Jong-il would have this technology. There's another issue I want to raise, and I blogged about this, wrote about it at my website at albertmuller.com, and that has to do with the morality of knowledge. And I want to take you to an issue where this really gets down to where, as they say, the water hits the wheel. You know, the knowledge of this kind of nuclear weapon is the same knowledge that basically is also used in the medical field, for instance, or in the production of atomic energy. In other words, the ability to split the atom led to lights being on in American cities, led to technologies for imaging systems for detecting disease in the human body, and led, yes, to the destruction of major cities in Japan and to the unleashing of this awesome power. Knowledge comes with a morality. There's a moral dimension to knowledge. Once we know something, do you realize we cannot not know it? And we as Christians understand that goes right back to the Garden of Eden, where after all, the fall had to do with the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And once Adam and Eve had eaten from that tree, there was no more moral innocence and there was no more going back, because we cannot forget what we know. And that's why the liberal utopianism of the just get rid of all the atomic weapons movement doesn't make any sense, because you can't get rid of the knowledge. That knowledge is still going to be out there, and someone is going to use that knowledge. It is a perverse equation where the morality of knowledge reminds us that here we are, we know this, and we cannot act like we don't know it, and we cannot forget it. Someone is going to remember how to do this. And of course, as the knowledge spreads, so also the contagion. And thus we find ourselves in this position, and we as Christians are the ones who understand this. Now, I said there was a real issue here, and my article on this prompted a response at some websites. For instance, those of some scientists who said, look, here is just another Christian response that shows that the Christians don't get it. You know, all knowledge, they say, is good. If people had ever thought that some knowledge shouldn't be had, then that's just a denial of the entire scientific project. And the knowledge can be used for good or for ill. The responsibility is just to use it for good. Well, here's the problem with that scientific analysis. It assumes that we are meant to know all of these things and that we can trust ourselves with this knowledge. And I will say emphatically that I do not believe, given the experience of the human race, that we can trust ourselves with all knowledge. Just in case you doubt that, let me ask you this, Mr. Scientist. Mr. Scientist, if you really believe that, then why don't you put the code for instance, the 1911 flu pandemic, the genetic code, out on the Internet? If you really believe that all knowledge is good and the dissemination of knowledge is unconditionally good, then why don't you tell them this? Or if you believe that, then why don't you just go ahead and take the recipe for making a nuclear bomb and all the technological knowledge that's incumbent upon that, and why don't you go ahead and spread that? Why don't you just share that with every Boy Scout troop? You see, even the people who make that argument, I believe, don't really believe it. And if you really believe that all knowledge is good and everyone should know everything, why don't you tell us the password to your bank account? Why do you not do it? Because you know that some persons would use that inevitably for evil purposes. That's human nature. And we as Christians are the ones who know that. This is not an excuse or an argument for not knowing and for being a know-nothing. It is an excuse for knowing, an argument for knowing, a rationale for knowing that every single object of knowledge that comes into our brains comes with a moral demand. We will use this for good or for ill, and yes, it means that there are some things I believe we would be better off not knowing. If we had all this to do over again, would we wish to undo the knowledge of the atomic weapon? I think most persons would. We'll be watching what goes on in North Korea. Frankly, we'll also be watching what doesn't go on. But the big danger here is that there will be a further detonation of an atomic weapon and further escalation. After all, when North Korea says it is a declaration of war, you have to wonder what kind of response they intend. Last week we talked about the sea change that appears to be happening in terms of the American public on any number of issues, and at least some shift on the issue of same-sex marriage. Just 2 years ago, you had an entire series of same-sex marriage amendments, that is to prevent same-sex marriage, crossing across the nation from the East Coast to the West Coast, passing by an average of 70%. Now you see that in states like Arizona and Colorado, it's a very different picture. And now the report coming out of Virginia says that 53% of voters back a same-sex marriage ban. That's 53%. Now, assuming those numbers are right, that means in a state like Virginia, you're following 17 points down the average of just 2 years ago. But there's other news in this, and that is that in Northern Virginia, which is the area closest to Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. suburbs predominate there, the measure lost by 55-42%. Folks, that's a picture of what's going on in America, and it's a reminder of the challenge we face to articulate a defense of marriage before it's too late. There again, we are responsible for what we know, and those of us who know what marriage is had better be talking about it persuasively before all is lost. We're going to be talking about transsexual, transgender, cross-dressing kindergartners when we come back. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. There's some new stuff going on, and it's going on in kindergarten, and it's going on both coasts, Broward County, Florida, and the San Francisco area, where now all of a sudden you find a kindergarten ground zero for transgender activism. In Oakland, California, there is a school that is promoting gender diversity for its students, and now you also have a kindergarten that is allowing a five-year-old, perhaps a six-year-old, I guess, to present himself or herself as the opposite of the birth sex, the birth gender. In Broward County, Florida, you have more or less the same thing. You had the school system deciding to allow, in this case, a boy to enter school as if he is a girl and to be treated as a girl, even though, of course, he is physically a boy. And according to those who are involved in the case, it's one of those situations in which you have, you have parents who are demanding this. You have parents who are demanding that it happen that way. Five-year-old boy in Florida, beginning kindergarten this year, is a girl. According to the counselor, he's diagnosed as having gender dysphoria, a condition in which the person believes he or she is the opposite sex. Now, according to some groups, Broward County Schools, and by the way, I graduated from a Broward County high school. I was a product of the Broward County Public Schools, but according to this news release, the Broward County Schools have the most progressive gender policies in the state. Very, very interesting stuff going on here, and you have it again on both coasts. You have it in San Francisco, and you have it in Florida. And when I look at this, I just have to wonder, where does this end? It's an Oakland elementary school in California and in Broward County, Florida. You know, what does this tell us? That we have now reached the point that we believe, I guess this is one great stretch of the imagination, we believe that a 5 or 6 year old is even capable of this kind of confusion. And then, of course, there's a greater leap, isn't there? And that is that the response to this kind of confusion is to allow the child to choose another gender. Let's be real honest. There are only a couple of options here. Option one, we say, yes, the child just is buying into the worldview of autonomous individualism and plastic sexuality to the point of a five-year-old. You say, all right, let's just let the child choose whatever he or she wants to be. And I guess that means whatever he or she wants to be right now. And I mean, the logic of this is that you can go back and forth. I mean, that's the only way you can honor this at all. I mean, if the individual gets to decide this, then the individual can decide this is today, this is tomorrow, a skirt today, you know, slacks tomorrow, boy today, girl tomorrow. The only other option is to say, look, boys are boys and girls are girls. And it is our task to help you to grow up understanding that as a boy you are to grow up to be a man, and as a girl you are to grow up to be a woman. Now, I hope most of you out there listening to this are saying to yourselves, how in the world can we be talking about this? I mean, and how can this be a part of our agenda? And why discuss it on today's program is because of this. We as Christians are faced with an enormous challenge in this generation. It's not a challenge just of dealing with isolated issues, A, B, C, D, E, and onward. It's dealing with a massive shift in the fundamental worldview. In other words, when we talk about those two options, yes, we're going to allow a child to establish his or her gender identity, whatever that child demands, whatever that child wants. We'll diagnose it psychologically as gender dysphoria, and we'll say, you know, you choose, if you're a boy, you can enter school as a girl, kindergarten now, or vice versa. That's option one. The worldview behind that, the only worldview in which that option makes sense, is a worldview that assumes that gender is a psychological construct. It's nothing more than what we want it to be, and we have the right as human beings to redefine ourselves according to this plastic and liquid understanding of gender, and we'll simply claim again the priority and the principle of individual autonomy, individual definition, self-expression, so that we will claim this for ourselves, even to the point of denying the gender we were born. And then you have, on the other side, a worldview that says, no, there is a gift from the Creator in making us as male and female. And in a fallen world, some people are going to be confused about this. Not only the old, but the young. All persons, perhaps, in between at different age stages can be confused about this. But that confusion is a symptom of the reality of human sin. And this person may be the victim of an awful confusion. But according to the Christian worldview, our response to that is to help clarify the confusion, not to embrace the confusion. Let me be blunt about this. To the glory of God, the Christian response of this is to find a way to help that boy understand what it means to be a boy and to grow up to be a man. And the Christian response is to help that girl to understand that she is a girl and to understand that God loves her in making her a girl so that she will want to grow up to be a woman. Now, again, you have two worldviews that are directly at odds here. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We need to talk about this because we need to frame this issue and frame our Christian response. If we're going to be at all relevant to the discussion going on around our neighbors, and by the way, it has to do with our children, too. I mean, your children could be in these classrooms. My children. And the children of my friends and neighbors and fellow church members could be in these classrooms. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And boy, we need to talk about this. Let's go to David calling from Chicago, Illinois, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, David.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mueller. My comment is this. What happens after puberty when we have physical education classes and other classes where the sexes will be mixed then? Then what happens?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, David. Let me just mention that in at least one of the schools that are cited in these news reports, this means you have to have a boys' bathroom and a girls' bathroom and an other bathroom. And as you are well implying, and you know exactly where we're going with this, you're implying before puberty, that's one thing, but after puberty, that's another thing. I mean, what about the locker room for P.E.? That's exactly the point you're making, David, and it's a very smart question. And of course, right now that's being dealt with in a lot of workplaces. That's being dealt with in a lot of colleges where you have male dorms, female dorms, co-ed dorms, and trans dorms. But, as much as we see that as a symptom of a deep societal sickness, somehow it just seems to me that we're reaching new depths of that sickness when we talk about it with children. David, let me ask you, if you were to frame a response to this, you know, if someone were to say to you, all right, what's wrong with this picture, and how would you respond to it, what would you say?
Well, I think I would respond in two ways. Biblically, this is just an attack on what God has deemed from the beginning. And I guess my second response actually would be kind of secular. I would be looking at him and saying, okay, if you want to do this, that's fine, but your kids are going to go through this program. And your kids are going to be showering together and being exposed together, and then see how they change their opinion on that when it becomes very personal instead of an abstract concept.
Yeah, you know, David, that last point's interesting because I think there is a sense in which a lot of people are willing to have this happen to other people's kids, but not to their own. And, let me just say right up front that I think a parent whose child has this kind of confusion is a parent with a tremendous challenge. We wouldn't wish that on any parent. To the contrary, we would want to pray for them and to help them. And we would understand that in a fallen world, excruciating issues like this emerge. And there will be few families, I think, that will not be touched by one of these excruciating issues as we move into the future. But the issue is this. Are we going to capitulate to this confusion? And by capitulating, thus perpetuate it? Or are we going to take responsibility to say, you know, there really is a Christian response that we have to speak to this. There really is a Christian understanding we have to bring to this. We can't join this confusion because we don't think that gender is an accident. It's not merely a social construction, and it's not something plastic we can just make and remake at will. The phone number is 877-893-8255. The issue is urgent and it's important. and it could soon be in your town. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It's Oakland, California and Broward County, Florida, that are at the very focus of the controversy we're discussing today. It has to do with the fact that schools in those two cities have decided, those two places have decided to allow children to present themselves as the opposite sex as young as in kindergarten. And yeah, I just find that shocking. You know, I often say that we're the people who shouldn't be shocked, because after all, when you start looking at this, you wonder, you know, what is it we haven't seen? Well, I don't think most of us have seen this. Not yet. The San Francisco Chronicle, writing about it, makes some very interesting statements. It says here, children with gender variant behaviors feel intensely that they want to look and act like the other sex. They prefer toys and activities typical of the opposite gender. Signs usually start appearing between the ages of 2 and 4. For some children, it's a passing phase. Some grow up to be heterosexual, some gay. Some children insist they are the opposite sex, although they might have a hard time explaining it. And here you have Catherine Turk, who runs the Gender Variance Outreach Program at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. And let me just put in a little comma right there. You know, who in the past would have considered that a Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. would have a gender variance outreach program that would needed a head? A director. I mean, this is itself, you know, this is something new. It's one of those reminders that we're living in a very brave new world. She said this, the point is we don't know the outcome and we don't need to know. And she went on to say, what we need is a place where children can express what they want to. I think that statement might quintessentially get to the heart of the problem. I mean, it seems almost pure in its reflection of the worldview we're talking about here. We need to allow children to express whatever they want to. We need a place where children can express what they want to. This is what really, really worries me. You know, where is the idea that there is a right and a wrong that that we want children to come to understand, and that there's a masculinity and a femininity we want them to come to know? There's some really interesting things, by the way. This isn't all these press reports. Embedded in the news articles are some really interesting statements. To join the discussion on this, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And the news account from Broward County, Florida, speaking of the 5-year-old boy who's going to be allowed to start school, was allowed to start school, as a girl, it says this, that this boy is genetically a boy. Well, he's not only genetically a boy, he's physically a boy, as the news article actually makes graphically clear. But interestingly, and as someone who grew up in South Florida, I find this very, very interesting. It says this was kind of new for Broward County, but down in Miami-Dade, just to the south, it says here, this is from the Fort Lauderdale News, the Miami Herald. It says, unlike Broward, Miami-Dade is a more diverse population of students. That's especially true in high school, where there are a number of openly transgendered teens, mostly boys, who believe they are girls. Each Miami-Dade high school has a sexual minority network where students who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered can turn to an in-house counselor or teacher for help. You know, when we talk about this divergence of worldviews, this collision of worldviews, we need to realize that both sides in this think the other side is completely out of it. And when we start talking about how to negotiate some of these cultural conflicts, you know, there are some who say what we really need to do is find a way to compromise. Well, explain to me where there is even the slenderest possibility of a compromise on this. Let's look at it. On the one side, you have people who say, individuals, even 5-year-olds, have the right to declare their own gender identity. Those who have a problem between their physical sex, their birth sex, and the sex they want to be will diagnose that as gender dysphoria, and will say that becomes the ground for them to come to know themselves by whatever gender they want to describe. You have that worldview on the one side. And thus, if you believe that, then the Christian who comes along and says, no, male is male and female is female, looks very threatening, very out of date, very out of it, very oppressive, very totalitarian, very patriarchal, and just very dangerous. That's the bottom line. On the other hand, if you hold to the worldview that says that gender is one of God's gifts and it's not a liquid plastic thing, it's a fixed thing to the glory of God, it's an absolute thing, then you have to look at that and come back and say, all right, then we would have to look at those pushing for this kind of agenda on the other side and say, this is just really, really dangerous. Both sides in this conflict see the other side as dangerous for what could probably be described as equal and opposite reasons. Very, very interesting stuff here. It was interesting when it dealt with adults. It was more interesting when it dealt with adolescents. But we've reached a whole new dimension when you're talking about kindergartners. I mean, how many kindergartners actually think of themselves in these terms that will be recognized as something that could even be diagnosed? Where does this start? And where does it show up? And more frighteningly, where does this lead? We'll be right back. Remember to join the discussion. Call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Austin, Texas, where John's on the line, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, John.
Excuse me, doctor, but what are you a doctor of? It's obviously not psychiatry or human sexuality. What's your background?
I am a doctor of philosophy and theology, but what is your point?
My point is that you're treating a gender issue as if it's some kind of moral relativism.
No, I'm saying that it's not morally relative. I'm saying that it is a matter most human beings throughout the entire history of the human experience have understood what gender is.
Most human beings don't feel like their gender matches their genitals.
Wait just a minute. Most human beings don't think that their gender is their physical constitution?
I'm sorry?
Just quoting back what you said, sir, you said that most human
beings do feel that their genitals
do feel.
Match their gender.
Okay.
But gender is a construct. Gender is not genitals. Just because you have someone who looks male and feels female is not out of order.
You asked my credentials, sir. What are your credentials for saying that? That is a quite audacious statement.
What is?
The statement that gender is simply a social construct and that's meaningful.
I did not say it was simply a social construct. I said gender is a construct. It is
I know,
a combination
but on what authority do you say that?
Mental characteristics. It can even be a combination of background, depending on the culture that you're in.
Okay, are you a doctor of sexuality? If you're the one who asked the question, what is your credibility for saying that?
What is my credibility is that I actually read what scientists write about gender. And that it.
And so that's now an issue where we have to go to scientists. What did human beings do for the last several millennia in trying to figure this out when they didn't have your scientists?
Paradox? Have you ever heard of the fact that heterosexual and homosexual were not distinctions that ancient people made? Have you ever heard of the fact that there are not two sexes but three sexes? There are male, there are female, and there are intersex people, some of whom
that is not another sex, sir. That's intersex or hermaphroditic persons are not another sex. That is understood to be something that happens like other birth defects.
Absolutely, and depending on when it happened and what age you were born in and this, that, and the other, you might
We're all born at age zero, sir. That's where we start.
As a girl and vice versa, but they would never have felt comfortable in that. Just because you have genitals on your body that say you are male or genitals on your body that say you're female doesn't mean that your mind, that your hormones, that your emotions, that your heart actually matches up with it.
Well, let me follow with you, John, with this argument for just a few minutes. So how do you know? I'm going to try to, you know, this is a safe place for you to call. No threat here, just an honest desire to understand exactly what you're saying. How does one then come to know what sex one is?
One feels it as if in a child or as in an adult. One says, I am a boy. What kind of energy do you think it takes a child to say, yes, I know what I see between my legs. I know what's the differences between boys and girls, and I don't match.
And you would not, as a parent, want to say to that boy, you are a boy, and you need to learn how to feel like a boy and enjoy being a boy.
Some kind of theological evil that a child might actually feel this instead of the fact that that may very well be the way God made them.
No, hold on. Wait just a minute. What do you mean the way God made them?
I mean that if you have a five-year-old boy who says, I'm a girl, where do you think he got that from?
I don't think he got it from God, sir.
Why wouldn't he have gotten it from God?
Because God's the one who made him a boy. And I know, I appreciate you calling, John, but let me tell you, what we have here is a graphic demonstration that these two worldviews are irreconcilable. You either believe that God had a purpose in making us male and female, or you believe, as John obviously believes, that this is what you feel inside yourself. And by the way, of course, that means what you feel inside yourself at any given moment. John, you've helped us by calling. I do appreciate it. We got to get these arguments pointed and clarified and set out so that we all understand them. And John called. And I think John's probably a very fair and I think straightforward representative of those who believe that gender is a construct and that gender and as he said, genitals don't have to match up. Now, I know that a lot of people feel that way, but I would have to say coming back that John says that that could come from God. I think, and this is where I am confident I'm speaking on sound biblical reasoning, that that has to come from something else. And that's one of the reasons why Genesis 3 is so essential to the Christian worldview. Not just Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 that talk about creation and why we are as we are, but Genesis 3 that tells us that the fall has so distorted ourselves and so distorted the race and so distorted our thinking that we should assume a deep and abysmal and deadly, even toxic, confusion. And the issue is how we respond to this in a way that is genuinely truthful. And in our therapeutic age, the response is just let persons express themselves. That's what exactly the therapist said here in the article I quoted from the San Francisco Chronicle. All right, very quickly, we'll try to get in as many callers as possible. Let's go to Paul calling from Tampa, Florida on WTBN. Go ahead, Paul.
Afternoon, Dr. Mohler. I was just going to make the point that you can think you're a thoroughbred horse, but I'm not going to put my money on you in the Kentucky Derby.
Okay, let's assume that what Paul means here straightforwardly is that what you think in your mind is not necessarily what you are, which, by the way, is a good reminder to all of us that there are certain realities we have to face. We either are or are not this, and whether we think we are or are not this. And I guess my response, even thinking about what John had to say, is I think that the most compassionate thing we can do for someone is to say, look at the mirror, and that's what you are. And true happiness is going to be found in coming to terms with who you are. I also want to say that I think we are all of us, not just those who hold to John's position, all of us are capable of an immense self-deception. And I think that is itself the demonstration and the substance of sin, this deep self-deception. And we have to be rescued from that one way or another. I don't believe that the modern gay activist therapeutic rescue is a way of actually helping. I think it's a way of making the problem a lot worse. I think the only rescue is a word that comes from without, and that is a word of Scripture, and it's also a rescue that comes not just from the problem of gender dysphoria, but from the problem of sin, and the only answer to that is the cross of Christ. This is obviously an emotionally laden issue. Dealing with it in a way that is both truthful and compassionate is going to take the sharpest, keenest, humblest Christian thinking we can possibly muster. And folks, just imagine what we've discussed over the last few minutes. This is the substance of real life for lots and lots of families and for lots of churches. And eventually, I think, for just about everyone in every circle of every church in every community. We'll be back with some final thoughts on the issue. And if we can fit a couple of calls. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Very quickly, let's go to Juan calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Juan.
Well, just to be brief, Dr. Mueller, all what we are seeing and we're arguing today, it is byproduct of stepping away from the scriptures. That's all it is. The farther away we step away from the scriptures, the worse the problem is going.
Yeah, okay. Juan, I'm glad you're able to get that in before we lost your signal. Let me say that I want to emphatically agree with you there, and I want to take the argument just a step further and say that I think what we have is another clear reminder that as a nation, we've been living on the residue of a Christian worldview for a very long time. We've been living on an inherited worldview. It's kind of like the legacy plan. There have been generations upon generations now that have really been in some rebellion against the Christian worldview. We've seen that in terms of the progression, especially from the 60s forward. And yet there was some kind of social constraint upon the American people, some kind of moral constraint to where, you know, certain things were still unthinkable. Certain things were still inconceivable. I think we're now past that. And having grown up in Broward County, Florida, you know, let me just say it's not inland America. It's not the Great Plains with the one of the red states. But on the other hand, it's an area I at least understand. I mean, you know, it's a community. It's Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach, Hollywood, Dania. It's a community and a place I know. And it's inconceivable to me. I graduated from one of the schools in that system. And it's inconceivable to me that this could even have been thought of. And here we are, and it's the new policy. The question is, where in the world do we go from here? It won't end here. It can't. And by the way, if you're able to determine this at 5, then why not at 4? Why not at 3? Why not at 2? You know, how long is it before, you can't even think of the horrible nightmares that could come out of this. You know, again, it comes right back to the clash of worldviews. We have two different worldviews with two different understandings of where a problem like this comes from, and obviously two different understandings of how this ought to be resolved. But what we as Christians must acknowledge is no one said this is going to be easy. We should never minimize the personal pain and the personal trauma and the personal agony that someone who is suffering from this kind of confusion is experiencing. And it would be a fundamental lack of Christian compassion simply to say it's an easy thing that can be switched to right or wrong. But it would be a fundamental failure of Christian witness, Christian truth-telling, and Christian conviction to say we don't know, on the basis of God's revelation, what His plan is for us, the only plan that will lead to health and happiness. Folks, we'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. As always, you'll get to set the agenda. We'll talk about what's on your mind. Write down the number, 877-893-8255. Give us a call.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.